we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
What does the largest real estate firm in China, Evergrande, or Evergrande, depending on how you pronounce it, have to do with Harvard, Fauci, and the COVID-19 pandemic? This is a question that was asked recently by a magazine called The Spectator, which is one of the oldest magazines in existence. But what they had observed was that on February 3rd of 2020, Dr. Fauci took time out of his busy schedule to have a phone call with the largest real estate developer in China, Evergrande. You might have heard of Evergrande recently, as it is one of the biggest in debt companies in China. It actually was on the verge of collapse about a year ago, and probably would have taken down the Chinese economy with it. But it seems that Fauci had time, February 3rd of 2020, to discuss with this real estate firm. Again, February 3rd, 2020 was a day before he had a off-the-phone meeting with a bunch of other scientists around the world to discuss the origins of COVID-19. But again, Fauci evidently has more time than all of us, as the leader of a response to a possible pandemic was able to meet and discuss with the Harvard Dean of Medicine, or Dean of the Medical School at Harvard, with, you know, just your average, you know, real estate firm, for a quick important, timely meeting. So I guess Stuart, may have not read exactly everything in this article, but Stuart, what would your questions be if you knew that Dr. Fauci, as well as the head of Harvard Medical School, had enough time on February 3rd, 2020, to get on the phone with the biggest real estate developer, and in all honesty, a $1 trillion company, from China?
Yeah, it is troubling. Troubling for many reasons. February 3rd, if I remember correctly, over 2 years ago, Fauci was busy, or I would hope he was busy, looking at options in how to treat and deal with COVID. Now, real estate holdings for Fauci in China doesn't add up on the surface to me.
Yeah, and neither for the dean of
100%.
Neither for the dean of the Harvard Medical School. I can't imagine. I mean, again, these are residential real estate. They were not university real estate.
Even if they were looking to open up a Harvard campus over there or a subsidiary campus, it appears that the NIH already has. But even if Harvard were looking to do it, you would think that the medical center at Harvard would be concerned about the ongoing pandemic that is so new, the novel pandemic, as they claim. You know, that is a big misnomer. We have heard novel from day one, but we know that it is far from novel when they have been planning for this for over 20 years. So it is the perfect connection to the discussion today about the corruption that's so endemic in this pandemic, beginning with Air Fauci, H-E-I-R Fauci, and others at NIH and in our federal government, and especially in China's government. This is the first time that that Harvard's medical school director has come on my radar about anything regarding COVID, but I'm certainly not surprised.
Well, I think it's interesting. The other thing that I have to question is how Harvard's medical school dean is the key to getting to Fauci. Usually, you would think that contacting the NIH or NAID or, you know, the institutes that he works as well as the government would be a way to get to Fauci. Instead, it was through a private university. And interestingly enough, it was a real estate firm, a quite indebted real estate firm, that evidently needed to talk with him about a large donation that they were about to give. You know, again, this was the day after he had scheduled a meeting with Anderson and Christian Anderson and all these other guys that had written to him earlier in the week and said, hey, this looks like something that is not occurring in nature. It looks like it likely was a lab leak. But it's just funny that at the same time, he gets this phone call from the dean of Harvard to talk to the head of a billionaire Chinese, basically. And actually, this billionaire himself has said in the past that whatever Grande does is what the CCP does. I mean, this is not as we would think a company in America. Over there in China, most of these companies, first of all, are required. Even American companies are required to have a Chinese or what we call a party office within the company, which is an interesting way for them to steal our technology. But in addition, most of the actual Chinese companies themselves are just basically, you know, commercial agents of the, you know, Chinese Communist Party as well. So it's just interesting. And I will go on to point out that at the time, Harvard Medical School was running. Harvard has a unique financial arrangement within their school. Even though they have a huge endowment, they have a kind of eat what you kill school model, which means that each school kind of exists on itself based on fees and expenditures. And at that time, for the last 3 or 4 years, they had been running $30 to $40 million deficits. So there might
be a need. Well, it's time to go looking for a place to invest.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, make a quick turnaround.
Yeah, exactly, to get the money that they had so long. So the actual thing that brought me to this article was I was listening to an interview with Mike Pompeo and Barry Weiss talking about Marco Rubio recently writing a letter to the head of Harvard Medical School asking for the specifics of this donation and why it seemed that the donation was made and under what circumstances the actual donation had to include consultation with Tony Fauci. Again, Tony Fauci is not a faculty member, from what I know, at Harvard Medical School, is he? I mean, he doesn't teach there. It seems
he's much more important. He's the funder of all their schemes. And what's interesting about the timing of this was when President Trump at the time was talking about China creating this virus. And one of the interesting claims from the Chinese in order to deflect from their neglect and their hopefully it was just neglect, but maybe very well have been intentional, is they were trying to deflect by blaming the U.S. Army, the U.S. military. I don't know if you remember that or not at the time, but it all comes back full circle, doesn't it? The CCP has been in cahoots with Dr. Fauci from the beginning, and the tentacles run wide and deep. And it is very sinister, given that they have murdered millions of people and refused to take any responsibility for it.
Yeah, and even crazier in this, you know, in this web that was spun was Peter Daszak actually is also involved in this whole transition. Actually, the person that cobbled together the world's best virologist, probably under Gunn, and had them write a Lancet paper that has now been not necessarily debunked, but most of the signers of that paper say they were forced to and actually had questions themselves. They were not as confident as Daszak was. Of course, Daszak is the guy that was funding the bat lady, Zhijing Li, to go out, and he had a project basically called the Virome Genome Project. And his goal, he thought, was to gather all the viruses in the world so we knew about them before they happened. And again, that's similar to what, you know, Xi Jingli was doing when she went to the caves in Hubei province and was collecting viruses from bats. Again, collecting. That's one of the most important things is, yes, coronaviruses do exist in bats. Most of us don't spend prolonged periods in close quarters with bats. Therefore, there's very little cross-homogenation. So it's almost like we had to go find a virus out in nature
to tweak
and manipulate it in a way to cause damage. Now, interestingly enough, Evergrande's commitment was exceedingly large, but it wasn't the first donation they had given. They had actually given Harvard Medical School in 2013 a $200 million donation and started the Evergrande Center for Immunological Disease, which again goes to show you that I think Mike Pompeo pointed out best that the world of academia is corrupt to its core because of its need. He actually said that probably 99% of all universities in America, if they were cut off today from Chinese money, not only grants, but just student tuition, they pay full board tuition, not in-state tuition, not deferred tuition, they pay. They would have to make some pretty quick and enormous cuts to their basic day-to-day activities. And so that, again, shows you how this web with China is much more involved than you think. And when we talk about the ivory towers, the academics, or the experts, that the conflict of interest that is presented by China's influence in most, if not all, of their labs, meaning from some way supporting the university, we have to assess that they're not going to be the lily white, unbiased observers or commentators that they appear or broadcast themselves to be. They are in many ways influenced by where the money, not just from Fauci, but from China comes to their labs and to their research. So that's one of the things that's been kind of surprising about this is we, you know, talk about China's influence in terms of trade, but at the university level, and I will say, I mean, there's a local university here in Birmingham, Stanford. I love it. It's a great Christian university. It has, I mean, the Confucius Institutes, the, Chinese money that is coming in because of educating of many of these people, party members' children. Actually, I didn't know this, but the president of China's daughter was educated at Harvard, got her degree in 2014. She did it under a pseudonym, of course, during the 4 years, but that's how much China loves Harvard. Actually, some Chinese, they interviewed a Chinese academic in Peking and said, as far as China's concerned, there's only one university in the world, and it's Harvard. So, but we know different, of course, but
yes.
I did Thank think this goodness, was interesting because it goes back. Yes, but it goes back to how intertwined the academic world, the government, or what I would call administrative agencies of medicine or science are, because again, most of these are revolving doors from Harvard to Yale to Bloom, to Hopkins. You know, all these are revolving doors to the administrative agencies, the NIH, the NIAID, AI, and they have a incestual relationship because they depend on each other for financing. And that, you know, means that when it appears that some of their funding and their research and even all their buddies have caused something that seems to be picking up speed and causing significant issues, that it's going to be more a rally around the troops type rebuttal. And I think that's probably where this all started in the wrong, because there was never an open debate. There was never an open account of where this came from and what to do about it. And so as much as I think there was a lot of politics involved, I think a lot of this probably was also CYA-ing, because, you know, both on the Chinese side as well as on the academic side here, they became to be the same, I feel like, and that's our problem. Yeah. So,
yes, it's interesting you bring up Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State. To my estimation, I majored in history. To my estimation, he is the finest Secretary of State we've had since George Marshall. This is very interesting that the source of all this begins with him, but when it gets to his level of attention, his connections and his wisdom and brain power is massive. And when he starts poking around at things like this, people are going to start scattering, I bet. And the sooner the better. The roaches are going to start scattering, I bet, and start looking for their own protection, because things are going to come down the pipe, and I hope quickly, that will reveal this to everyone unequivocally what Peter and Ginger Bregan and others have been writing about. And that is, this is the biggest corruption of our lifetime. This whole scam was intentional. The evidence is clear. And and dovetailing into all of that is, I don't know if our readers heard this past week, that the country of Austria's health minister has started backpedaling. And he is now blaming the doctors who did not give informed consent on the massive amount of side effects. If they did not give informed accurate, informed consent to their patients when giving these jabs, they are going to be held responsible to the tune of 14,000 euros per case, I would assume. 14,000 euros per case of misinformation or lack thereof, given the abundant data on the dangers from these jabs. It is going to be, I bet that the house of cards is going to begin to implode quickly. But once again, the tentacles of the corrupt and the corruption, the tentacles of Bill Gates and Fauci, they run as deep as the CCP, and they have a massive amount of firepower. By the way, just a note, last week's interview with Dr. Bregan, he had an author pointing out the fact that Walmart, the biggest employer in our country, has a deal with Homeland Security. All of their videos go to Homeland Security as well as the CCP, which is a generation ahead of the U.S. in facial recognition technology. And why would Walmart want to give our government and the Chinese government facial recognition videos for their own utilization? It goes to the incestuous relationship between Walmart, the biggest employer and the biggest company in America, and the CCP directly, so they can keep making the cheap products over there. And the United States government. All of this is so evil.
It goes to, I think greed. I mean, the marketplace of China is enormous and people want to sell stuff. But America has a lot of money to buy stuff. I mean, money that probably reprinted yesterday, but money nonetheless.
Right.
And it's the, you know, it's our regulators. And again, I'm not a big fan of government, but it's government and business. When they get together, the only people it hurts are really the citizens. And I think we need to realize that it's corruption of what we call corporatism, is, you know, it takes away honest dissent. And it's we should expect more. Of course, many of us don't have other options at this point. I recognize that. It's the car that's parked out that says boycott China in front of Walmart. That makes you think for a second, what the heck we're doing. So we will be back after this break. Again, this is America Out Loud Pulse, one beat ahead. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We are with Concerned Doctors, and we are glad you are here this afternoon.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Back to Tuesday's edition of America Out Loud Pulse. I'm with Dr. Jordan Vaughn and I'm Stuart Tankersley. Clearly, the bureaucrats, the very wealthy bureaucrats in our America's government, in conjunction with the Communist Chinese, have embarked upon a dangerous road that I would dare say no Americans want us to be going down. That is the creation, the intentional creation is undeniable now of the SARS-2 virus through which we are finding ourselves without many of the rights and responsibilities that the founders of our country 250 years ago or so gave us. And now we find ourselves beholden and trapped by the Chinese Communists. And this is undeniable. Dr. Peter and Ginger Bregan wrote the best-selling book, COVID-19 Pandemic, Global Predators, We Are the Prey, recently. And it goes into the confirmed evidence, the evidence that shows without a doubt this has been orchestrated by, unfortunately, several Americans whose names are touted as heroes throughout the media these days, along with their direct connections to the CCP. And I think if we would just back up and look at what our country was, how our country was founded, with simple, clear understanding that human nature is evil. And if we don't have intentional checks and balances on people in authority, that they will do bad things. And that is where we find ourselves like never before in regards to the dangers and the destruction wrought by these people in our own government. And what we're looking at in particular is the connections between Harvard Medical School, Fauci, NIH, and the Chinese in the early days. And this was brought recently to a head by Mike Pompeo, the wonderful Secretary of State for the previous administration, who is questioning why are all these relationships. Make note of the time so they can splice that out. I'm going to put my thing on. So why are all these relationships needed? And the timing of them is very suspicious. For the beginning of February of 2020, there to have been so important connection between the defunct Moderna, the defunct, at that time, Moderna, the defunct biggest real estate company in China, Harvard, which was in the red, as well as our own federal government, which is in the deepest red of any economy in the world. How is it that they were colluding at such an opportune time for them and not so opportune for the rest of us? How and why was that occurring? And we now know the evidence is clear that there were connections going back decades in order to invent and make money off of these types of viruses. Very, very troubling. It should be to everybody. And the evidence is clear that that is the case. And thank goodness, it looks like there are the dam is beginning to crack with the Minister of Health for the country of Austria saying, wait a minute. Of course, he wouldn't want to take blame for anything that he's done wrong. But now he's putting the blame on the doctors and putting the blame on the doctors for not giving informed consent, which is something our organization has been screaming about from the beginning, Jordan.
Yeah. And,
what do you think?
So, Stuart, the other thing is, as you kind of, you know, juxtapose the Austrian health minister and what's going on with the Harvard/Fauci/China, what it goes to show is that the days of your physician or you as an individual or patient being lazy and assuming that what Harvard says is independent, honest, and true should end. Because as physicians, we can't rely on the words of other people. We have to go and look at the data. We have to evaluate how our own patients have issues with something and make decisions for ourselves. Now, medicine has been kind of heading in the direction of guidelines and protocols. A lot of them have the names of these great universities at the top of them. But what we have to now realize is if science is corrupted by influence, then your ability to utilize those guidelines or utilize their paper or utilize what they say as the reason that you're, you know, that's your what alibi or defense against doing your own research. That's laziness, but it's also the days of that are over. And from now on, you can't assume, well, it said it in the New England Journal of Medicine, so that's what I did. The problem is now we find out that the New England Journal of Medicine is funded and corrupted by influence and money from the manufacturer or from a country that wants to hide an origin. And so I think that's one of the things that juxtaposition should alert any good practicing physician that cares about his patients, that from now on, unfortunately, we can't just rely that what's said from the ivory towers is true and should be applicable to the situations with our patients. I
want to bring up a very, very important article. And this was dated in June of 2020, of course, 6 months before the vaccine rollout. And the title of the article, and we will post that. We will post the link to this New England Journal article to our podcast today. Ensuring uptake of vaccines against SARS-CoV-2 is the title. And this once again, it was initially published June 26th, and then it was the initial publication, and then it was open for review, and then in October, the final version, which was unchanged from the June version, was published. So once again, it was before the vaccine. And it is very well worth reading. It's two or three pages long, and it gives six criteria that must be met in order to consider mandating a vaccine. And we have not met these. And we've run as far away from these, a couple of these criteria that must be met. It is very tragic that these were good criteria laid out. And what's interesting in this article is there is an indication we must be cognizant of and aware and strongly consider the potential for bias in accepting the vaccines because of the pressures that would be coming from the government and or the pharma lobby.
Which, by the way, is always in medicine. I mean, again, it would be, I would compare this to the example of a patient under duress. And you were saying, making sure that they understand the risk of something as they are worried about their existence, their life, makes that balance a different balance, a balance that you should be even more sure that they are fully informed. Because they're always going to side with the, oh my gosh, I'm going to die if I don't do this, which sets up a balance that's out of balance.
Right.
So they are correct that there's going to be a bias, and that bias will always, at this time, in the midst of a media pushing that everyone's going to die from this disease, you're more likely to line up and put your arm out than you would be in another circumstance. Is that correct? Is that what you're saying?
So. That's correct. And so here they are. The first one, wow. Here we are last week or two. We're now forcing 6-month-old and to 5-year-olds getting the vaccine, right? People who have these young children have virtually zero risk of dying from this virus. Yet, this is going to be forced through their pediatricians on our country. But what is the first criteria? COVID-19 is not adequately contained in the state. Remember, Jordan, a year or two ago, it became shocking to our group when containment was not did not become the goal, but eradication became the goal. Once again, giving them more authority. But so is COVID-19 adequately controlled in our state in 6 months to 5-year-olds? I would say absolutely it's contained.
Well, they already had it. But yeah.
Right. Because they have the natural immunity well over 80%. This is their data. This is CDC data. Number two, and this is just tragic here. Number two, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP, has recommended vaccination for the groups for which a mandate is being considered. Well, that would make sense in the pre-COVID era, maybe. But now with the utter corruption of the bureaucracies in Washington, this one can be thrown out the window because it is useless.
Yeah, I would, the independent committee, I think it has already been proven that their independence is not the independence that we celebrate yesterday on July 4th. This would be what we would call a loyalist or royalist who may have showed up at a meeting people breaking away from the British. I mean, these people work for the industry that they are policing or, get money from it.
It's utterly corrupt.
And then not only that, we look at that most of them are academics. And we just pointed out in the last segment that the academics are corrupted in multiple ways. The independence of the university is at an all-time low.
Yes. Well, luckily we have number three. Lucky for us, number three is covered. Number three, the supply of vaccine is sufficient to cover the population groups for which a mandate is being considered. Wow. Thank goodness. I don't know if you heard last week or not, Jordan, that our federal government has just signed a contract with Pfizer. It's worth over $9 billion, I believe, but the initial installment is over $3 billion. It's going to be a 56% markup in their previously historic vaccination costs. So thank goodness. I mean, with the billions of dollars that we don't have, we're going to be able, Pfizer's now going to be able to supply us with a sufficient dose, amount of doses.
Stuart, Pfizer has to deal with inflation too. So don't, you know.
Yes. Thank you for pointing that out. In this runaway inflation time that we're having in our country, we need to be fair to Pfizer.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's probably, they made that argument. Unfortunately for Joe, he didn't have much of a rebuttal to it because inflation is out of control. Going back to COVID, actually, if you want to know the reason that inflation is out of control, it's because during this Fauci-recommended shutdown, we printed more money. Actually, I went to a meeting with Joe Manchin, who's the only Democrat that I probably would ever give money to. He was pointing out that before they were talking about the Build Back Better, which he said basically was $7 trillion, and that's why he voted against it. He had his staff calculate the cost of the Marshall Plan and World War II, okay, and then do an inflation adjustment, and it was under $5 trillion, okay? So we have already spent more than we spent to rebuild Europe and keep Europe from being overrun by Nazis just to keep our kids home and make us unhealthy. So just to let you know,
what a cowardly group of people we are now, unfortunately. All right. So at least number three, the criteria that they are establishing that must be met before we can mandate these vaccines, at least number three is being met. So number four. We got to laugh at this one because otherwise we would be on the floor in the fetal position crying. Number four, available evidence about the safety and efficacy of the vaccine has been transparently communicated. Ouch.
Ouch. Yeah.
Wow.
That's definitely mark that one off.
Yeah. Unbelievable. We could talk.
What's the opposite of transparent? We probably just need to replace that word. That's what's happening. Maybe opaquely.
Or maybe communistically.
Yeah.
We are following the ways of China. Unbelievable. These are the New England Journal of Medicine's criteria that must be met before considering a vaccine. All right. From June of 2020. Number five, the state has created infrastructure to provide access to vaccination without financial or logistic barriers, compensation to workers who have adverse effects from a required vaccine, and real-time surveillance of vaccine side effects. Once again, utterly wanting.
No question, a failure.
Utterly wanting. The failure at every turn in our federal government and in our state and county governments in doing this. By the way, it's very important for everybody to realize that according to the laws, CDC, if you are a provider that gives these vaccines, by law, you have to report the vaccine side effects, have to input them into VAERS. Unfortunately, less than 1% do, but that's Harvard, I don't know if we can trust that data because it's from Harvard, but supposedly they did a study 10 years ago that showed that less than 1% of adverse events are actually reported into VAERS. But by law, if you give a vaccine to a patient, you have to put the adverse events into the VAERS system. And maybe that's a mechanism by which, like the Austrian minister was saying, that doctors can be held liable for their lack of informed consent, and in the days ahead, because there is going to be a day of reckoning. And then finally, number six, the sixth criteria by which that must be met by which mandates can be implemented in a time-limited evaluation. Voluntary uptake of the vaccine among high priority groups has fallen short of the level required to prevent epidemic spread. Once again, 6 months to 5-year-olds have virtually no risk of dying from this. Yet all of a sudden, now they're going to be a high priority group. So it's very, very sad.
All right. We will be back after this to continue discussion. We also want to read through a couple of questions we had that we thought Fauci should answer when we were helping a senator craft some questions and see if any of these have been answered. But we will be back after this break. This, again, is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley, America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
Many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We had just been reviewing a couple of the, I guess what I would call non-negotiables in regards to vaccines and vaccine mandates that was put out by the New England Journal of Medicine in June of 2020. Among those, I think the only one that was fulfilled, Stuart, remind me if I'm wrong, was the availability of vaccines to all the high-risk groups. And as Bansal and other guys at the head of these organizations continue to mope about how many vaccines they have to destroy because no one wants them, it seems that the availability of them is not a question. The question is if something is available yet causes damage, is that something you actually want? Would that be correct, Stuart?
That's right. And of course, the cost of us doing this while we indebt our grandchildren to more and more historic levels of indebtedness. While we're doing that, we're going to give Pfizer and the others billions and billions of dollars to produce a product that is very unsafe and very ineffective. Very odd.
Yeah. One of the things I thought was interesting was that the vaccine biological community did meet last week to discuss composition of our fall rollout of vaccinations against COVID. And one of the things that they discussed was what genetic code to include in these instructions. And by genetic code, including in these instructions, that would be whether to include the original Wuhan strand or the Omicron strand. Interestingly enough, they came to the conclusion that they should include both, which is, I don't know, a quite an interesting development. But they also did not know which strand or variant of Omicron to include. And as we already know, Omicron that appeared in November and Omicron that is occurring right now happen to be quite different. Is that what you've seen, Stuart? That's what I've seen in my office, meaning the vulnerabilities of them are almost not even in the same league. I mean, I would say most of the people that are showing up in my office currently are older people that are twice vaccinated, twice boosted, and are now for the first time, I guess, getting COVID, mainly because many of them had been kind of living in fear for a while.
Well, it's not only our observations. The evidence is clear that that's happening throughout the world, that the more vaccinations you have, the more likely you're going to have. And we know this is not a new immunologic response that we're seeing that we've never seen before. We knew, if you listen to Dr. Robert Malone or Dr. McCullough or several other people who know this kind of stuff through and through, if you follow how the immunity adapts, we could have told people, we were telling people a year or two ago that this is not going to go well. Dr. Michael Yeadon and others, this is not going to go well if we will, if we continue to, in the middle of a pandemic, try and give an immunization of a strain that was original only. You're going to do harm to the immune system to make it imprinting is what the term is, imprinting. But you're going to do harm to the immune system to make people susceptible to this variant.
Yeah, interestingly enough,
and that's exactly what we're
the
seeing.
The reason they're actually still including the extinct Wuhan strand in this updated vaccine is actually because they actually acknowledge imprinting, I think, there, Stuart.
That's right. That's why they have to keep it in the new bivalent vaccine, or as they call it, a vaccine. These new biological agents that they're going to formulate for the fall, it has to have the original. Now, if you get the flu shot, you don't have to have the
original. You don't have to have last season. Typically, right, when we talk about quadrivalent vaccines for the flu, they're including some of the worst offenders of the past 50 years in that strand, which is a reasonable, they include probably the H1N1, they include maybe even something from the Asian flu. And then they try to pick two.
Yeah.
And guess what? Here's the funny thing about that, Stuart. How often are they correct? It's a flip of a coin usually.
Yeah, we're going down a rabbit hole because the immunology from the quadrivalent vaccines and the flu are the technology is completely different than these vaccines, as they call them. So we're going kind of down a rabbit hole. I shouldn't have gone down. But the fact is that we knew how the body would respond to these new technology vaccines because of the imprinting.
So that kind of sets us up for a fall that will be quite, I think, revealing to what the total outcome is. And the reason is because we have set up, I will tell you, and at least in my practice, a lot of the people that are getting reinfected, again, my practice has a lot of people that come to us because of we know how to treat COVID. The people that are getting reinfected, even within the Omicron period, are pretty much vaccinated individuals, which makes me, again, concerned about the ability for somebody to mount a sustainable response after vaccination. And that seems to be something that's worrisome. And obviously not worrisome for Pfizer, as they will make it almost necessary that you need an update to your software. But to the average doctor who wants this to be behind us, that's the issue. So,
yeah. So with all that, Jordan, let's present several questions, fundamental questions, fundamental questions that need to be asked of people in leadership of the scientific community in our country and in our state and in our counties. Some fundamental questions that they will avoid at all costs. They have avoided at all costs for the last year or two. Let's go through some of those.
Yes. And actually, it's probably about 8 months ago now that we had a list of things that we wanted Fauci, one of our senators here locally, to ask. Again, a lot of times getting those questions actually asked is fairly difficult. And one of those is, basically these medical freedom questions, I think, is one of the starters. Yes or no, are government or HR personnel adequately positioned or equipped to evaluate the veracity of an individual's claim of a religious exemption, which is one of the questions that we have, at least in the office, a lot of times, where people do not need or do not want the vaccine. And I would argue that that's probably most people that appear in my office, given that the vaccine is completely ineffective at this point. But it's, again, you'll see the HR departments and the government, they're the ones that are making the evaluation of whether that person's claim is legitimate. And that puts, again, the balance of power back to where it doesn't need to be. I'll ask the other thing. One of the other questions was, yes or no, do you agree that a person's personal physician is in a better position to prescribe drugs or treatments than a bureaucrat in Washington? Again, most of these questions were going to be asked to Fauci. Hopefully the answer to that would have been yes. And the problem with that is that if the answer is yes, then what the heck's been going on for the last 2 years? One of the other things I think was a good point is when Dr. Tankersley was evaluating how we roll out this gargantuan undertaking of vaccinating a population. Again, as somebody that has a history in kind of organizational, especially in a military way, you know, in planning for deployment, yes or no, of an eventual vaccine for COVID-19, did your organization determine specific thresholds to be reached of mortality and morbidity for each group, including children, that would justify pursuing an accelerated timeline for emergency use authorization? I think that question is more relevant than ever. You know, and then one of the questions we said is, you know, show us the data that says, hey, this is what we would consider an emergency for this age group, for this age group, for this age group. Because now the fact that it's a blanket emergency, a one size fits all, we are acting as if a 5-year-old's risk from COVID is equivalent to an 80-year-old's risk in terms of how quickly and how necessary a vaccine is for them. And that's just lunacy.
In the military, the officers, the commanders have a planning section, people that are planning. They're looking at what the threat levels that we know, what are the, you know, what, how do we need to be tracking whether that threat persists or not. And we also, in the planning section, has to be open to the availability that there will be a changing battlefront. There will be a changing dynamics that they are unaware of now.
Yeah.
It clearly indicates to me the CDC and the NIH have zero planning. Their planning section may be one person, if that, because they have, well, I'm backing up. If they are not nefarious, because I think that there's a big planning section going on, but it is not for what it should be focused on. It is focused on planning for the destruction. They're flying this plane to the crash site as soon as they can get it there. But what a normal planning section, in order for us to win the battle, in order for us to win in the fight against COVID, if you were looking at it purely from science.
Yeah. And
I think there is nobody in that section of the building.
Well, I mean, one of the awful. Other examples would be the most recent 6-month-old to 5-year-old vaccine rollout for Pfizer. They did 2 shots initially. The data on that was so poor. In fact, a lot of it was negative efficacy, as in the FDA actually said, hey, Pfizer, why don't you try a 3rd shot? Now, I'm not really totally understood, you know, and so they, instead of meeting about the 2 shots, the FDA said, hey, let's postpone this and let's try a 3rd shot and let's kind of mess around. And the problem is that's not the FDA's job. The FDA's job is this is what we have. And it was found wanting. Go back and figure it out. And again,
not add more. Maybe
we're just even suggesting, hey, have you tried this? I mean, that's not their, that's really not their job. It's kind of, you know, they're not a, they're more of a yes, no organization rather than
guidance.
They don't need to tutor the industry about what to do next, right. Nor does probably industry need their tutoring. But it was just interesting to find that the data was so bad that the FDA had to recommend that they try something different before presenting the data. And maybe because I guess it would be like the teacher saying, you know, this paper is so bad, I'm going to give you an F. You don't want to turn it in. So you might want to go rewrite it. So, and that's just not the way that especially injections for our children should be worked on. So the last thing I think, the most important thing that we still are starting to see a dance to expose this, but I think the dance to expose it is because so many people have gotten COVID now that the argument's going to be that the spike protein is causing damage because of the virus itself. But need I remind you that the instructions that the vaccine provides are to have your body make an unknown amount for an unknown amount of time, the spike protein that is really stabilized from a technology that was developed in 2016 by our government. But one of the questions we had is, it's still your contention that the spike protein is benign, yes or no? And I think that contention is hopefully being, even in the academic community, they're starting to realize that this is, there's no question the spike protein is dangerous. I think that's...
which we've known about for over a decade.
And not only that, at least in SARS-CoV-2, we've known for, you know, at least within the first month, that the thing that was causing the vascular inflammation and platelet issues and clotting and making this disease unlike anything we had ever seen before was the spike protein itself. But, you know, in their ultimate wisdom, our government as well as industry decided to use the very thing that causes issues with the disease itself to have our body make, which is just, again, never been seen before.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insanity. Absolute insanity. So all of these important questions, please feel free to, as you listen to this podcast, please remind yourself to go online and send us your questions so that we can ask more and more. We've got plenty more that we'll be going over in the coming weeks. But these are some of just the basics. Why in the world did we choose the spike protein? What type of planning section do you people have? Who is regulating you? Who is overseeing you? Of course, they don't think they need to be there needs to be any oversight of them, as any tyrant believes, like the CCP. And why are you blocking why have they persisted in blocking the treatments that are known to be effective, proven to be effective? Everybody, we've said this many times, everybody, we'd encourage you to go to C19study.com. That is C19study.com. It is a wonderful repository. It is daily updated. It's a repository that is daily updated of the different agents used to evaluate, that they evaluate the studies. The site evaluates the studies that show the benefits or lack thereof of certain agents. And they've been around for over a year in following these things. So I would encourage anybody to go to that website.
And with that, we will end our show today. Right. We are thankful for all the listeners. And again, this is Dr. Stuart Tankersley, Dr. Jordan Vaughn. We are with Concerned Doctors. To read more about our organization, concerneddoctors.org, an organization that is committed to getting medicine and physicians back to taking care of their patients and all the nuances and uniqueness that is in every one of the people that we see as doctors. That is really our commitment. And if this last 2 years has exposed anything, it is that administrative one-size-fits-all medicine is bad for your health. So again, we will sign off from here. This is Dr. Stuart Tankersley, Dr. Jordan Vaughn, America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.